started in July. Federal prosecutors charged ComEd with bribery. They claim that ComEd gave $1.3 million to Michael Madigan's associates, who's the speaker, for doing little or no work. This was at a time ComEd was seeking support for legislation that would benefit it. ComEd agreed to pay $200 million fine. This week, more developments. There was another indictment of a senior vice president of governmental affairs at ComEd. It was presumed he's going to be pleading guilty. Madigan has not been charged with anything. The Republicans have now launched a full and special investigation into Madigan's ties with ComEd. And joining us this week on the Karen Conti Show is Stefan Blandin from the law firm of Romanucci and Blandin. He is the lead plaintiff's lawyer on the class action suit that has been filed on behalf of ComEd customers who may have been affected by this fraud and bribery. Stefan, welcome to the show. How are you?
Karen, I'm great. Thank you for having me. Just one minor correction. I'm co-lead with Adam Levitt. He's my co-counsel on the case.
Got it. Got it.
That's pending in the state court of Cook County.
Now, your firm handles different kinds of cases, personal injury, medical malpractice, catastrophic injuries. You have $450 million in verdicts and settlements over the years that you have been involved in this law firm. So you do these kinds of cases. Now, tell our listeners a little bit about what the lawsuit states and what the allegations are.
Sure. Thank you, Karen, for that opportunity. So this derives from the deferred prosecution agreement that Commonwealth Edison entered into with the U.S. Attorney's Office. In that agreement, Commonwealth Edison admitted to bribery and admitted to receiving in excess of $150 million in benefits as a result of that bribery, connected to legislation going back to 2011 and 2016. And what we have found is that the number is far in excess of $150 million. It's billions of dollars in benefit that Commonwealth Edison has derived. So what we have done is we've brought a class action lawsuit because most individuals are not able to hire a lawyer for if they've been bilked, if they've been defrauded, $100, $200, $1,000, and not able to hire their own lawyer for that. But in this case, there are over 4 million potential individuals that have been defrauded by this system. So we've brought an action on behalf of everyone. We will request class certification. And if we're successful, then all of the people who are in Illinois and Commonwealth Edison's territory will be eligible for part of the judgment that's received.
And I'm going to talk a little bit down the line about how listeners might be involved. Do they have to do anything? But let's put that aside for a minute. I want to talk a little bit about the connection. And again, you probably and you may not know all of this stuff at this point. That's what litigation is about, is discovering these kinds of things through getting the documents and maybe even watching the federal prosecution go on. But how is it? How will you connect? How do you anticipate connecting this bribery scheme that has been alleged to the change in what rates ComEd was charging that were related to this scheme?
So our case is a little different from that. Our case is actually something that is not a ratepayer type of case. This is actually fraudulent legislation that was procured through bribery. If you remember what took place at the time, Commonwealth Edison had attempted to pass this through the Illinois Commerce Commission, and they had pushback from it. So Commonwealth Edison bypassed the ICC altogether and went to the legislature. And Governor Quinn at the time vetoed the legislation. He saw it for what it was. And as a result of the bribery that took place, Commonwealth Edison has admitted that they've received significant benefit from it. So the unique thing about this case is Commonwealth Edison, they sought to get out from under by just paying $200 million to the government and not have to acknowledge the full scope of the benefits that they've derived. But in that deferred prosecution agreement, what we see is an admission to the crime, and we see an acknowledgement, the causation component of the benefit. So our chief responsibility is going to be going and digging through all of their records, taking the depositions of all of the individuals at Edison and Exelon, the parent company, and determining exactly how much they bilked from Commonwealth Edison customers as a result of this fraudulent legislation.
So there's been additional indictment this week and an investigation into Michael Madigan himself, but internally in the House. Are you going to be following these indictments and these investigations carefully in order to supplement your knowledge of what went down and how it affected consumers?
So, again, that's a unique part about our case that separates us from some of the federal filings that followed our lawsuit, where there were RICO actions that were brought. In our action, because Commonwealth Edison has admitted to the bribery, we don't have to go further and prove anything else. They've admitted to it. And as part of that deferred prosecution agreement, where no one went to jail, nobody is being sanctioned, Commonwealth Edison acknowledged that they would not deny those admissions in a court of law. And what we see right now through Commonwealth Edison's propaganda machine, their PR department, is they're now walking all of that back and trying to deny it. So we're hopeful that the U.S. Attorney's Office will enforce that deferred prosecution agreement. The specific agreement that you're referencing with the Commonwealth Edison Vice President that happened Friday afternoon, I think at 5:30, we are very interested in that, and we're going to be very interested in all of the Commonwealth executives that are under investigation, from Ann Pomajori on down up to individuals whose names have not been mentioned at Exelon. We believe that this is a cultural phenomenon at Exelon and Commonwealth Edison.
And, you know, I'm not going to ask you to speculate completely, but, you know, I've had a show where we talk a little bit about what is the difference between lobbying and bribery. And they always say that lobbying is just bribery with a business suit on. But, you know, do you see that this type of lobbying crossing the line, I mean, way crossing the line into a situation where you want to affect the legislation, you pay the money to the campaign, or you pay the money. We see this in the red light lawsuit. I don't know if you've been following that, where apparently some of the red light company has gotten a lot of big shots on board, and they're paying people to different people in different municipalities to implement the red light and to actually get more tickets and get more revenue into their communities. Do you have an idea about how to stop this, or is that something beyond what you know how to do here?
Well, I'd say several things. Mentioning red light, our office was one of the firms that was involved in the class action red light settlement that was obtained a year ago. There was a $30 million resolution in that case. But you're right. It's a huge, huge problem. And the only way we're ever going to do away with this problem is by getting money out of politics. And that's going to require overturning Citizens United. That's the Supreme Court case that was decided by this conservative U.S. Supreme Court that we have that allows unlimited money into politics, and they treat it as free speech. And as long as that continues, you're going to have this continued corruption of government. It's inseparable. The line between lobbying and bribery keeps getting thinner and thinner, and corporations, because all they have to do is pay fines, nobody goes to jail, they keep crossing it. So is there a distinction between lobbying and bribery? Well, of course there is. Lobbying is where you hire individuals who are registered to advocate on behalf of certain positions, which is a very democratic concept. However, the problem with lobbying is the amount of money that's in the system is just, it's disgusting. It's overwhelming.
We're talking to Stefan Blandin of the law firm of Romanucci and Blandin. And when we come back, we're going to be talking a little bit about consumers out there and how they can get involved or what they have to do or not have to do. We're also going to be talking about your office, Stefan, who's representing not only George Floyd, but Daniel Prude in the litigation against the police officers. This is a Karen Conti Show, and you're listening to WGN. We're talking to Stefan Blandin of the law firm of Romanucci and Blandin, one of our premier personal injury, catastrophic injury law firms in the country. And we're talking a little bit about the ComEd class action lawsuit. Stefan, I wanted to ask for the listeners out there who may be involved in the class in that they are ComEd customers in the Illinois area, one of the 4 million or so. How do they get involved, or do they need to do anything?
So that's one of the benefits of a class action, is they don't need to do anything at this juncture. If we are successful in the class action lawsuit, what will happen is we will then receive a list from Commonwealth Edison of all of the individuals who've been affected, and we will reach out to them, and they will be included in the distribution. There will be a pro rata, a proportionate payment that would be made onto each on behalf of each individual, and unless they elect to opt out of the class and pursue their own case, then they would automatically be included in the class action judgment or settlement if one is obtained.
We have a listener who has a question. Are you willing to take it, Stefan?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
All right. Here we go. John in Barrington. How are you? Welcome to WGN. You're on with Stefan Blandin.
Good evening, Stefan. My question was, since, like you mentioned, that they have admitted to the bribery, is it possible to actually ask a judge to set aside the law, they could say it's unconstitutional because it was passed under fraudulent or a bribery condition?
That's a good question. Could you undo the legislation? Interesting. Stefan, do you know the answer to that?
So off the top of my head, that's a great question.
Yeah.
I don't know the answer to that question. I think what you're going to see is you're going to see an extensive amount of pressure on the current legislature to do exactly what you're talking about. However, I know Governor Pritzker has said repeatedly that he is not going to let Commonwealth Edison and its parent company, Exelon, go back to the well, and in fact that's exactly what's happening right now. Within 2 weeks of filing our lawsuit, Exelon's CEO has threatened to shut down two nuclear power plants in Illinois unless they get another bailout. It's just mind-boggling.
Interesting. It's a very good question, John. Thank you for the call.
Sure.
To say that it was the only reason that it was legislated was because of false premises, meaning that people were taking money in exchange for that benefit. That's a good one. But probably the easier way to do it is just to overturn the law by voting. I have to ask this question because I'm a big believer in class action lawsuits. In fact, Brown versus Board of Education, which integrated schools, started out as a class action lawsuit. There have been many, many very good automotive lawsuits, the Target data breach case, even the BP oil spill resulted in class action lawsuits that have ended up resulting in good for the environment, good for the community, and good for people as a whole. But there will be people, Stefan, who will say the only people who make money on class action lawsuits are the lawyers. To them, you respond, how?
I would say they're absolutely right. The people who are involved in class action lawsuits never make money. The only ones who do are the lawyers who bring these cases. The folks who've been affected, who are the named plaintiffs in these cases, they might get a portion of the damages that they have had taken from them, returned to them. The reality is, in this situation, whether you're dealing with something like tobacco or Enron or WorldCom, Exelon, Valdez, Dow Corning, which resulted in multi-billion-dollar class action settlements, there was not a member in the class who was made whole afterwards. The unfortunate reality is these corporations are allowed to hide behind their corporate shield. So you'll have cases, we're involved in one right now against Sterigenics as a result of the poisoning that's taken place in the west suburbs, and literally hundreds of folks, we just filed lawsuits on behalf of who are cancer victims. So what's Sterigenics' response? Their response is to start paying out dividends to their shareholders so that by the time a judgment is obtained, they will have depleted their assets and they'll have less money to compensate those people. So one of the huge limitations of class actions is it's very, very hard to make each individual plaintiff whole. The positive part about class actions is it allows lawyers like me, greedy lawyers like me, who are going to go out and fight on behalf of these people, so that if you have millions of people like we have in the Commonwealth Edison case that cannot afford to hire their own lawyer for $100 or $200 or $1,000 claim, we will be representing them on their behalf, and we will do everything in our power to make them whole. Or to come close to it.
And I think down the line, you promote change. And sometimes legislative change is not effective for one reason or another, but the almighty pocketbook is a good way to affect change. And I see it, we see it in all of these things. It's not worth it anymore for a company to do bad things. And that's the message that gets sent. And I'm quite sure that when companies are coming up with medicine or whether it's an automobile or what have you, they're factoring in how much will it cost to put the safety device in or the safety procedure versus how much are we going to have to pay if we get sued for this? And I don't know. That's not a bad thing. I mean, I feel safer because of it.
When I was in law school, Karen, the reason I got into this area of the law, we had a class on product liability where we went through the exploding Ford Pinto gas tanks.
Yes, I remember that.
The discovery in that case revealed that Ford made a decision that they were going to have X number of people who were going to be killed each year, and they determined that it was more profitable to pay out those settlements than to change the position of the gas tank. So you're right. Class action lawsuits are an effective check on businesses that put profits over safety.
Now, your firm represents the family of George Floyd, who was killed by the strangling in Minneapolis. How's the family doing watching all of this resulting protests, and some of it good, some of it bad, and the publicization of some of these other police shootings?
So I know the Floyd family is a very, very strong, united family, and they have renounced the looting and the violence that's ensued, and they've repeatedly said that's not what George would have wanted. However, they are encouraged. They are so moved by the diverse people that are protesting and exercising their peaceful First Amendment rights to speak out and to be this tipping point of change. We are at a historical time where our country is coming together, and we are going to change this horrible stain on our country's past history. And we are going to have police reform. We are going to have racial equity in our country. And this generation is—it's just amazing to watch what's happening. And the Floyd family is so encouraged to see that. And as George's daughter said, Daddy is part of that change.
And that must be of some comfort, you know, because you don't want anyone to have died in vain. And although you'd probably rather have your dad back, this is at least something that is a positive thing resulting from that horrible negative event. So as a lawyer in this case, you watch that now what happens in the criminal prosecution with the police officers, and is that going to be an important? Can you tell our listeners a little bit about how that is important in your case against the police for civil damages?
So the criminal action, they will go first, and as a result, our civil case has been stayed, and we won't be able to take depositions or do discovery until the criminal case goes forward. So we will be watching with great interest to see how the Minnesota prosecution handles that case, to see what the defenses are, to see what other evidence comes forward in that case. But the issues are, the legal issues are different. The burden of proof and the standards are different. But we will be watching it very closely.
Now, you also represent the family of Daniel Prude, who was killed in Rochester, New York. Is that right?
Yes. Our office has been retained to represent several of Daniel's kids. Daniel's from Chicago. And my God, what a tragedy. Just another horrible loss of life that never should have happened.
And, you know, that's one of the most difficult things to see, is that, you know, there's some stat that, was it a quarter of all people who are arrested by police officers, you know, may have some mental illness issues. So, you know, it just seems like this is a guy who has had issues. This is a guy who's, the police were called on because he had some mental illness issues, maybe some drug issues. And instead of treating him for what was undergoing, which was a mental breakdown or what have you, he was treated like a criminal and horribly horribly killed. I mean, it's a horrible thing to watch. Again, these lawsuits are painful. And again, I assume that you're going to be doing the same thing with that case, as watching the if there are criminal charges and watching that case go forward first before the civil case goes forward.
We are hoping that there are that there is a criminal case that goes forward. We have just read that they have decided to go to a grand jury to determine whether or not charges will be brought. And if the charges are brought, there will be a criminal case that takes place before our civil case. But regardless of whether there's a criminal case or not, we will definitely be pursuing the case.
Stephan Blanton, thank you so much for joining us. Stephan is with the law firm of Ramanucci and Blanton. Can you give our listeners a quick contact for where they could contact you if they need to hire you for one of these wonderful cases that you handle?
Yeah, the best way to get a hold of me is to send me an email. My email is sblandin, B-L-A-N-D-I-N, at rblaw.net, or to give our office a call at 312-458-1000, or just Google us, Ramanucci and Blanton.
Thank you so much for joining us.